Yogi Berra once said, "Baseball is 90% mental. The other half is physical." The Pitcher's Dad podcast, hosted by Joe Lorenzini, has the mental half covered. His kids take care of the rest. And now, without further ado.
So thanks to the Sarah baseball team. That was a pretty good soundbite. Welcome, Adam Farb. How you doing? You. Thanks for coming on, man. I thought it'd be fun to get you on here and ask you some simple, you know, just some baseball questions, right? Sure. Figure if there's somebody that knows, it's you, or at least in our experience, you've been pretty good to us, the Lorenzini family. And so, heck, man, thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure.
That was, what was that, Monday night at the Boris. Joey was doing, pretty good.
Yeah.
I think he had given up a hit that was an asterisk, you know, a chopper to Cash. And William Walbridge took that 1-2, I don't know if we want to call it a slider, but it was in a closet because it was hanging up so much. And he damn near put it off that center field fence. And then they started chirping, you know, put on the podcast. I thought, hey, how funny. Let's do it. All good times. That was a good game. What's new?
Things are good.
Okay.
Watched a lot of baseball the last couple of days. Got to see a lot of our guys.
Yeah, you were telling me before that how many guys you think, past, present, all that, are in the Boris right now?
Yeah, we counted. Someone asked me it yesterday, and I was curious, so I counted in the program. There's 49.
49, wow.
49 current and,
that's pretty
and or
good.
Former alpha players.
Yeah, yeah. Here, push that towards you a little bit.
Yep,
there you go.
Got it.
Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, that's kind of a cool tribute to the program, right? I mean, you've had some good dudes through.
Definitely.
You've had, I mean, that'll definitely be one of those topics where, you know, I think when you're doing this, I know me as a parent, you know, having a daughter and a son going through different programs, everybody has their own kind of like thought process on travel ball. And they think, sure. They think they know, right? Like, hey, you know, Adam Farb did roll up in a really nice car, but it's not a Lamborghini, right? And I don't think it's paid for by on the backs of NCTV or Alpha Baseball. We've talked about this at length, you know, the money that goes in and what it costs to do it.
Yeah, well, NCTV is my business, so
yeah.
It is paid for by that.
Okay. But it's not a Lamborghini.
It is definitely not.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no, the high level of the travel teams, they don't make money.
Right.
Like they cost money.
Yeah. They, yeah. Yeah. And that is the thing, right? I mean, traveling and getting to the East Coast is not cheap, you know, rental cars, hotels and all that stuff. So let's do NCTB first. I think I made some questions here because sometimes I try and come off the cuff, but I'm not that smart. So how did you come up with NCTB, the league, and now Alpha? How did that all start?
Obviously three very separate things. NCTB was founded in 2005. At the time I was coaching.
Okay.
Where
were you coaching at?
I was coaching, I started the first club program in the North Bay. It's called the North Bay Extreme, started in 2000. Around that same time, I kind of made a career change. I had a concert business coming to college. I had, after I sold that, kind of flamed out, burned out, sold that in 96 or so. I'm doing a little bit of coaching. I'm working for the city of San Francisco, Department of Elections. In 2001, I got out of the corporate world, decided to do a little baseball camp business. It really just came to like, I'm doing well financially. This isn't something I really enjoy.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to do something I enjoy.
You're doing something for a living that paid the bills, but not
right,
sports.
Okay. Right. And it wasn't a good financial decision. I went from making, I think, $85,000 at 27 years old and, you know, and single and having a good time to making $25,000 the next year, which for anyone familiar with the North Bay, that don't work.
Yeah, I don't think that covers the note at all.
So, you know, I went broke.
Okay.
Like broke.
Okay.
Like repossessed car broke.
Oh, geez. All right. Yeah.
And then I, you know, I grinded it out for a couple years. I'm doing this little club program. Club baseball is obviously very different back then. And I'm grinding out some lessons. Like, I don't even know. Like, yeah, I was doing enough to get by. So we'd go to these tournaments, and tournaments were very, very different back in 2003, 2004 than they are today. You would have to call a tournament director at 11 o'clock at night on a Wednesday to get your brackets and then have to communicate out to all your families. You would play triple headers that didn't count for anything on a Saturday. On Saturday night, you or a team parent would have to call the tournament director at 11:30 at night when the games ended to find out when you're playing the next day, which sometimes was 8 a.m. Wow. So then you have to communicate it out to families of 12 and 13 year olds who are probably in bed. Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, technology, I guess, wasn't there.
It was, though. Right. Oh, it's just how it, at one point, that was probably true. But like, we had the internet in 2004.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? For sure.
So I had an opportunity in 2005. I got a few dates at the brand new Big League Dreams Reading. And it was, to be honest, like when I first did it, like, oh, this will be a good little side hustle. Mm-hmm. Right. I'd run maybe one tournament as a fundraiser for a club. And then I started to kind of put it together and, you know, okay, well, I think there might be something here
to it. Okay.
And put a business plan together. It was going to be to run 10 dates in Reading, to go to some of the smaller parks, you know, run a 16 team tournament in a weekend. And like, I think it can be more than a little side hustle. Like, I think there's a real business here. It was going to be the third business that I'd started at that point in my life.
And how old are you at that point?
I was on 04. I was 32.
Wow. Okay.
Right.
The third business, that's
31, 32.
Yeah, okay.
And the thing that I took away from the first two is I didn't really have a business. I had a job, right? Because it wasn't going to survive without me doing everything.
Yeah.
It's why I burned out in the first one. And obviously, you know, baseball camps and lessons, like your product is you.
Yeah. Yeah. You are selling yourself, right?
Right. Okay. So, I said I knew I was going to work, but that I wouldn't make that mistake in doing it. Obviously, the business plan gets thrown out the window. I happen to catch the right time. Travel ball boom happens. But the pitch was really like, hey, all these things that we go to tournaments and we bitch to each other about, let's just make tournaments like that.
And we'll fix what we're
like,
talking
I can
about.
Put the scores online. You can get your brackets on Monday.
Right,
you know,
right.
We'll have a real an event name.
Yeah,
so
it
feels cool, right? Like it feels more of an adventure for the kids and the families than April 13th, 14th.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. And how was, did you ever look at softball? Like I wasn't around in softball back then, but I don't know if it was similar, same, already doing.
Honestly, I don't know. Like I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
I'm a baseball guy and I'm sure it could have been done. I have no idea who the right players
it's
in the space were to navigate and make that happen or what organizations.
Okay, yeah.
So like I'm sure it could have been.
I don't know.
It just was never really my interest.
Yeah.
My interest was on the baseball side and to be honest, like we never really stopped growing.
Yeah,
so,
it was just it took right, off at that time.
I mean,
it was probably the right time.
Within a year of starting NCTB, the Twin Creeks complex kind of falls in my lap. Long story that's not that interesting, but you know, and all of a sudden I've got to scale up to running 60 team tournaments, which is
a lot
more umpires, a lot, you know, and we ended up a couple years later, you know, doing an exclusive deal with them, which has lasted multiple deals through this day, to be the only baseball tournament provider. And they did that with us because we were filling the park. They make money when the park's full.
Is the park a privately owned place or
it is? So it's county land.
Okay,
county land, privately owned.
Okay, and then what is the biggest logistic problem that you? I mean, was it umpires? Was it park? Like, what would you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's think of it. I mean, you played it with your kids. Like, it's location and field quality. Umpires, your first line of defense, and then who's going to be in it? So it's fields, umpires, customer service.
Yeah, because once you get the location and then you get the reputation for hosting probably the better teams or whatever, then
or just for filling. So you
know
you know that
you're gonna
when you sign
game.
Up, there's going to be a tournament. Yeah, no, right?
That's a good point. Yeah, you don't even think. I mean, it's so expanded now that it's, yeah, there's almost a watered down effect, right? There's so many teams, there's so much travel ball, and you hear people in that 40-year-old range where they're just like, man, I only had one all-star game, you know, and I didn't have travel ball. And now I think when my kids right. get to the point when they're 40, who knows what it'll look like, you know?
Not like this, probably.
No, it'll something probably different. Change, right? Yeah. So then, okay, NCTB starts, and then you said, did the league came before Alpha?
Well before Alpha.
Okay, so how did the league come about?
So you get into it, and
what is the league? I guess some people won't know what
so the league is a program that's in year 12 right now, so... And I'll give you the history of it because it's kind of a cool story. It's the top, quote unquote, the top 52 eighth graders in Northern California. Obviously, we don't get everybody. I don't mean to say like exclude everyone else.
I feel like you have gotten, I mean,
we've gotten most, but like 90 something. There's people for whatever reason don't do it over the years. No big deal.
Yeah.
So we play, it's the same format we've had since. The first year, actually, which is
that's cool.
5 weekends spread throughout the spring so that we were trying not to go heads up with the teams that are our customers.
Mm-hmm. Because you are taking players from various travel ball teams.
They all play for somebody.
That all want to play in tournaments also. Okay. Right. Yeah.
So it was intended to supplement, and I'll tell you how it came about. There's a gap, eighth grade spring, always has been. Half of their teams, with the way baseball divides ages, end up being freshmen in high school, half of them are eighth graders, and there's this like, God, the 14U competition sucks.
Right.
And we'd always talk about it.
Because it's weird.
Like, yeah, it's just watered down, and it's a big field and all that. And so we're like, all right, like, what if we do like a league for teams? This is 3 years before we actually got to the league. So we did a team league. Let's get eight really good teams.
Bring your team.
Bring your team, right? We'll do double headers. We'll whatever, whatever. It was an absolute circus. Like, teams were canceling at the last minute.
Was that the gauntlet, or that was something different?
The gauntlet, yeah, the gauntlet was different.
Okay, that was after, right.
So this, so we did that for 2 years. The first year was just messy. The second year, one of the teams in it was from La Mirinda.
Okay.
Their head coach for that La Mirinda 14U team was Mike New, who's now the head coach at Cal. Right. At so the time, the head coach at Diablo Valley College. They had, their team was loaded. Nico Horner was on that team. Nick Madrigal was on that team. Joe Demers is on that team. Trevor Larnin. You're talking three
some
or four
dudes that are actually playing in the
three
big
or four
leagues
big
now.
Leaguers on that team. Yeah. Okay, they beat the holy hell out of everybody all through that spring, and I knew those guys. I'd coached them in the Team USA stuff, and Mike's obviously a wonderful coach.
Yeah,
good but this doesn't seem good for them.
Yeah,
right. Like, they need to play against each other
for sure.
Right,
for like, sure. Yeah,
and so I'm like, I don't know that I think a team league is therefore the way to do this, because clearly this thing where everyone's going to unite on one super team isn't going away.
Yeah. The like, yeah, right.
So like, what if we just kind of got them together and mixed them up? Right. And that's, so we tested it the next year. We did an event called Players Weekend. A couple of big leaguers from that, Ryan Kreidler and Andrew Vaughn were both in that.
Nice.
We did it at the high school I was coaching at Drake High School. Brought in Domingo Ayala, like, had a great time. And we even had some rain that weekend, got kind of dampened. But, like, I just remember walking away from the weekend going, well, this works.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So the next year, we decided to launch the league. Obviously did a lot of groundwork with the club teams that existed. Didn't get 100% support, but we got enough. Yeah. You know, really only one or two clubs that fought it.
Yeah, because I'm sure, right? I mean, I can think of Joey's year, and he played on a certain team with a certain persona, and they're like, they had to finally come to realization that, like, getting selected for the league was a real nice, you know, accolade or whatever.
I think by the time, you know, Joey came through it, like, it's pretty well established at that point.
Yeah, and it was like, hey, man, if you hold the kid out of that,
everyone had to adapt in the same way that, like, we have to adapt to area code tryouts, right, at the Alpha level. Or, you know, PG National or whatever.
Yeah, you can't hold yourself in such a high regard event, you're gonna,
right? Like, there's,
yeah, hold it against
there's
the
a
kid.
Couple things you just have to work around.
Cool.
And I think we had made it something that you better work around.
Right.
Or they're going to leave your team and go play for somebody else.
Right.
Like, parents don't like being held hostage.
No, I mean, it's, you know, it's a, and it's a two, I mean, let's be honest, right? It's a double-edged sword, I think, because if you let your kid go to the league, then he plays with all these studs, then there is an option to go play on a team. That comes later, you know, with the
alpha. But you can't hide them.
But you can't hide them. Yeah, right, like, right.
Do you think people aren't going to know about a good player because you try to stash him away until he was a senior? Like,
yeah,
how do you think that
player,
works?
Yeah,
like,
if you're a good player, you're also going to know who the other good player. You know, most parents, I mean, especially now, like, they know. So,
and they, you know, the whole reason that it becomes exciting is like for top players, certainly, like, they end up being big fish in small ponds.
Yeah.
And it's not challenging enough for them.
Right.
Right. Right. Like, oh, they're successful. Oh, they get all these accolades, but like, they want to test themselves. Like, that's what they're supposed to
for
be
sure.
doing. And it provides that environment. So the league came about as we had tested out the team thing and then, okay, like, this could work better.
Right. Right.
And you know, some of it is just my mindset of like always having to tinker with things. And some of it is like, we were trying to solve a really specific problem, which is how do we provide a supplement to the frankly mediocre competition that's happening in eighth grade summer.
Okay.
And it over time, I think it's when we started doing all the tryouts, like it became something more special
mm-hmm.
and almost like the kids were showing up week one, having already made it special in their minds.
Yeah.
Right.
I can think back to, I thought it was really cool how each team had a coach that like Joey's coach was Bodie,
yeah.
who's now a coach at Cal.
He's
also,
coach
right.
At Cal, yeah.
So, and he was, I mean, he was the first guy to, you know, he treated Joey like, not a man, you know what I mean? But he was like, hey, right. man, this is your, and it was kind of like, all right, sweet. It's your first time where the parent doesn't really talk to the coach.
Right.
And the coach, you know, is this high level guy. I think at the time he was at Los Medranos or
he
something.
He was at Los Medranos at the time.
And, you know, had pitched and
yep.
It was cool. It was like, hey, and then they get the college uniforms, right? Because they all, mm-hmm. I think it was the Ducks, the Beavers.
Titans and the Commodores.
Yeah, so is it still the same teams?
It is.
Oh, I mean,
the alums would kill me.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So that was cool, right? So then you had Vandy, Fullerton, Oregon. And
yeah, if you think back to Oregon when State. We did it, right, the people have asked me, like, why'd you pick those teams? First of all, those four programs were really good back in, what was 12 years ago?
Yeah.
It's 2013.
Yeah.
Right? Four of the top programs had won national titles, and they have four different colors.
Yeah.
Right. So that was the standard.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
We need four different colors and we want good program.
Yeah. And
I mean, it wasn't great, anything more than that. Right.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, they're obviously all still good programs, but just different. Right. Times
and, have changed. And Oregon at the time, you know, you're talking about Chip Kelly football, like Oregon had the coolest uniforms.
Oh,
so like,
yeah. And they still have some pretty cool unis. No doubt about it. I think
obviously Oregon baseball was just coming back to fruition when we did it. So,
and now they're doing just fine.
Now they're doing fine.
Yeah. So the league happens, and then how does Alpha, because initially when we moved up here, you know, we hadn't, I mean, living in the Bay Area, I don't think we had a real grasp on USA baseball. We definitely didn't have a grasp on the league. And I say I didn't have that.
Right.
You know, it was kind of like, hey, Joey plays football, he plays basketball, he plays baseball. And so over this last week, we got to see some of his friends, childhood friends, when he played Sarah. And I thought, you know, I was going down memory lane and like, man, he probably would have went to Sarah. He'd probably be on this team. Would he be where he's at now? And, you know, I don't know, but I know this. It did seem like sports is different, you know? And what I mean by that, it's not that the football coach here at Rockland doesn't want you to be there all summer. You know, I think what I've noticed is that if you played football at Sarah, the summer program was a priority, or was, you know, you weren't going to be allowed to go travel around and go to Florida and or
sure,
it'd be hard to do, you know.
I mean, I think, you know, having coached in high school, like, well, the multi-sport thing can be trickier than people.
Oh yeah,
you know,
hands down.
Because even if you have good people who want to make it work, like, it overlaps.
Yeah, we talked about a player this weekend, and, you know, he's now in college. He's a great college, and he's played three sports, and he was a stud at all three sports. Yeah. And, you know, you hope that, hey, that person's going to have a little extra in the tank when they – but it's hard, right? Because
right.
it's
– And you're given – you know, people ask that question all the time, and you'll hear college coaches give the correct political answer, which is, oh, we love guys that play multiple sports. And they're full of it. What they mean is we love guys who are athletic enough to play multiple sports.
Yeah, yeah. We love that you could play another sport, and we'd like to see
you play. And now you need to stop playing that sport and play our sport, right?
Right, right, right.
So, but it doesn't mean you can't make it. It just creates other difficulties, and it creates a different path, and you have to navigate it.
And that's the point I'm getting at, is that path. You know, you see some kids who had phenomenal high school careers in multiple sports, and some dudes that didn't hinder them, and some guys you're like, hey, maybe that was the right choice anyways, because, you know, you weren't going to become the 98-mile-an-hour flamethrower.
I think it just comes to, like, what do you want to do?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, if you want to play another sport, play the other sport. You only get to do this one time.
Yeah, no, you're right.
But understand the price of that, right? And I think and do that with open eyes. Because and you can't just say, well, I want to play another sport, so there is no price. It's not true.
Yeah, right, right. You're gonna miss, and that's the whole FOMO thing, right? About and we talked about this on some of the other podcasts where it's like 8, 9, 10. You know, you should go to the wedding. You should not miss the funeral. You shouldn't miss stuff. I mean, even up till 12, I would argue, right? You can, you know, when you get in high school, yeah, it means more because you're doing varsity, not varsity, whatever. But you're gonna have to pick what you're doing, because it's very difficult.
Well, there's, I think when you're in a team sport, there is a shared commitment.
Yeah.
That's required, right?
Right.
Like, I think we can all agree that what would be ideal for your family or your player is that everybody else shows up and you can come and go as you please.
Right? That's a great point. Yeah. You are
right. But if you let everybody come and go as you please, you're never playing.
Well, right. Yeah, and that brings up a great.
And now you're pissed, and it doesn't serve your needs interest anymore. So you agree to give up a little bit of your flexibility and freedom because everybody else agrees to do it, and it becomes like, well, the coach says we have to do this. That's not what's really going on. What's really going on in this world is if you give people the option to do whatever the hell they want, they're going to do whatever the hell they want.
Well, that's the great example is I had a deal with a client. And I think I had asked you, I said, hey, we're flying out to Georgia. Can I leave on Wednesday? Because I think Joey's going to pitch on Tuesday. And you're like, no. You know, and like that was always your hard rule, right? Like, hey, you're here for the whole week.
Yeah.
So when people ask me, they'll say, hey, hey, Farb or hey, Alpha. And I'll say, hey, just understand the tournament's Monday through Friday. You're expected to be there Monday through Friday.
Yep.
And we didn't have the PO role really until this last year. I mean,
right.
We had that ability to hit and play, or Joey had the ability. But as a parent, you know, you're thinking, hey, my kid might get in the game. I want to be there. So you want to be
and
there.
And I totally, like,
but it makes sense what you're saying.
It's reasonable, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, hey, this is what you're doing in the sport. This is what you have to do.
Yeah.
And like, you're not getting the whole experience. You know, you're just showing up and being a showcase guy. And like, there are tons of teams that do that. That's not our thing.
Yeah, no, right? And I would say, you know, the proof is in the pudding. If you look at the team, just the Alpha team in general, you can go back probably as far as you want, at least in our time here, that there's been some really good players who just weren't on the team anymore because they didn't buy into that, you know?
Of course.
And so to your credit.
And I mean, obviously Joey had and your son had an interesting ride because of his injury.
Right, right.
Right, where, I mean, he was with us for 3.5 years. But he played 4 or 5 events,
yeah,
right?
Right, right.
He played the 8th grade UBC. He played the freshman UBC when he was already hurt. And then
so he plays Florida at the end of 8th grade summer. They win that.
Florida in the fall,
yep,
right?
Yep. That's fall freshman year.
Freshman year. Plays plays one event in the summer.
Yep. Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And then doesn't play the rest of freshman summer. Doesn't play sophomore fall. Summer.
He has a surgery.
Doesn't play junior fall. And then his first live at bats were January of junior year, right? And
cool, right?
He hits 90, and he's so happy, you know, and then he played 2 events plus the Potters game last summer, like that's it, that's his whole ride. But and so you got to see the beginning, and you got to basically see the end, but you kind of missed the middle, right?
Oh, 100%.
That team never stays together with that many high profile guys if they didn't love each other.
I mean, it's the glue, you know, and I talked about this, you know, and how this podcast came was like writing these blogs, you know, and I'll never forget the first USA tournament when the boys won. And Joey was filled with this mixed emotion, you know, because I think Troy or somebody said, hey, I'm going to bring you home a medal, you know? And he was like, yeah. And you could just see his just deflated inside because he's like, I should be there. You know, I should be there. And he wasn't ready, you know, and he wasn't ready to go back. And so, you know, yes, you want to win for sure. You want to have a good time, but that was a hard, hard thing.
Yeah.
And by the time he came back, right, some players had changed and some pieces got moved, but the majority of the team,
the core of that team held together from start to finish.
And like, it did feel, I mean, we're not playing for you anymore and I don't have a reason to blow smoke up your, you know, but I thought we had a good vibe. Like the parents, I still really appreciate all those parents. We didn't have, I mean, you think of like Rod or just some fun parents.
Yeah, you get this wild mix of parent personalities. 100%. And like,
SoCal, North California.
Eventually, like, you know, you'll have a family that it just doesn't fit their vibe, right? It's not the right fit. Yeah. They might be a good kid. He might be a great player.
Yep.
But you ain't right for them and they ain't right for you. The one thing that I think we've tried to bring is some clarity to it. Like, here's who we are.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, no, we're not trying to be them.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Nothing against them.
Yeah, right.
But
right,
like,
right.
If we were trying to be them, I should tell them to just go play for them.
Yeah,
right. Like,
there's different teams that have different.
Yeah. So, you know, what can you do when you're Northern Cal based and you're someone like me that actually values and thinks it's important for them individually, right? Not transactionally, but individually, to actually be on a team and care about a team. And you think, yeah, we have all these players that are lab rats. And we can get them biomechanically better and they can get stronger. And that's a good thing to do. But no, they don't know how to win.
Right.
Right. And then they get to college and everyone goes, oh, nobody's teaching them that. Well, no one's teaching them that because it's not incentivized.
Right.
Right. Like, what's incentivized? Go throw your two innings and get the hell out of there. Right. Go throw 93 and don't worry about how many strikes you threw or who you beat and whether your team won that game. And I'm not even saying that.
And we're talking about that's like showcase baseball.
Show
yourself, and if you win or you don't win, who cares? As long as you did good
time. There is some showcase value to that, but there's this whole other side.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't personally want to do it if there's not that whole other side.
No, and I think we saw that at the, I mean, unfortunately, we didn't win this year for a three-peat when we, the Lorenzinis, were there, but boy, we had some great games at Cary.
We're in a 0-0 game in the bottom of the sixth inning in the championship game. Like, it's not like we weren't competitive in the tournament, right?
Like, but I'm thinking back to, like, you got Chase Bentley starting, and we're thinking, hey, okay, game one, we know. And then just a whoa, you know, like a early loss.
Yeah, we had a base running snafu. Chase pitch. We lose what, 2-1?
Yeah, Chase pitch phenomenal.
And like, then we have the big comeback in game two.
But that's what I'm getting at, right? So you get kicked, and then. That's where the boys, and then game two, we're down big.
Yeah,
and those guys were chirping. Remember the Florida Pokers or whatever they were. And I remember the boys kind of just looking at each other.
It's funny. I don't even remember who we were playing.
Yeah. Oh, I do. You know, that's a parent thing though, right? Because you think,
and that's no disrespect to them. Like,
no.
Because they got a good team. At that moment, like, it isn't about them. But right? It's about us and going like, hey, like,
I remember, get our shit together. I remember those kids because they were like, oh, ranked one for what, you know, the S talking got good. Right. And, I think our boys are each other like, what are we doing here? You know? And then Porter ends up ripping off a couple hits and, Mace comes out and pitches great. Yep. Brock, I mean, it was just cool. It was cool. And then they went on a run and then it was kind of like, you know, not like, oh, you woke the draft, like nothing.
I actually think they were all good games. It was a fun run but in any case, like that part of it is cultivated, right? And cared about, and you don't always know.
Yeah.
But like, I do know that, you know, if you remember that fall WWBA that they won as freshmen, that's an underdog. Like, let's be clear. Like, we're considered a mom and pop shop, right?
Among eighth grade,
big travel
summer,
ball, right?
Yeah, like, somewhat unknown. I mean, maybe, right. I don't know.
And I'm sitting with, and like,
how many teams were in that tournament?
I don't remember, 100? But a lot. And if you remember, it was also our first year going to the Jupiter tournament.
Yep.
And we came in third.
Yep.
Right. So like, there's a little bit of like, who the hell are these guys? Right.
That was
like,
the older boys were at Jupiter.
The older boys made a run that same day.
Yep.
Right. And end up losing in the semifinal. And Jupiter is you know, the tournament on this, the circuit. Like,
yeah,
the local kids from Northern California are not supposed to do that, right?
And to set that stage, I think so, you had thousands of pro scouts there. I mean, I don't even know how
that tournament is. That tournament is the only tournament that, like, if you only did one travel ball thing, do that just for the experience.
So we never got to do it
because of his injury.
But we got to go see it that eighth grade year, and it was insane. It was like, what is this? You know,
and on every field, there was changed a little bit. But if you go back to that, and it's only 3 years ago,
mm-hmm.
every arm was 90 plus.
Oh,
every
yeah.
last was, one. Like, if you were 91, like, you felt like you weren't throwing hard enough.
Yeah. But every kid that went there uncommitted and did well had a call.
Yeah.
Or like area codes, you know, probably similar to.
Yeah.
But it was a good, it was one
it's
of those
a big
ones,
stage.
It's worth it.
It's a big stage. So we, you know, we have this program noise. I didn't think we were going to win the freshman WWBA, right? Like that year. Like, I didn't think we had the team for it. We were missing a couple guys. That's how we ended up with the SoCal guys there, is like, we were short some guys.
And, that's right.
You know, and they kind of came as a group, right? And the groups meshed at some point. Like, the only thing I can say is I was smart enough to realize that we caught lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, yeah.
And go like, no, like, this is what bonded, got these guys together. And like, we better hang on to that. Or like, this will all break apart.
Did we have 12 guys? I mean,
12 guys or 11.
Alec Blair pitching the championship game.
Alec pitched the championship game.
Yeah, which is like, Alec's like, hey, I'm, you know, it's like, everybody's a pitcher, right? With 12 guys and however many games. But no, that was a fun.
I just remember we played the Canes Midwest in it, and the guy's like, how the hell do you guys have this arm left for the championship? Like, he doesn't pitch. Yeah. He doesn't pitch.
His hat coming off every, you know, because he's used to being out in center field.
Thank goodness we were, because of the rain delays, we were in 5-inning games, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We played, remember the team that was...
we never survived that if we're playing 7-inning games. No.
Delaying, like, oh boy. Yeah, that was
The Puerto Rico team?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And...
I had to calm down Chip that day.
I'm
like, Chip, like, we're about to take the lead. Like, the stalling's actually helping us. Like, calm down. Yeah, I need you to calm down.
That was good, because Chip didn't really make too much about nothing ever. You know, he was just very quiet and did his thing.
Well, you come to those things to play, and these guys are trying to stop you from playing. Right?
But they get like a 2-run lead, and then each batter would tie their shoes, and the coach was
It was the best, most absurd stalling job I've ever seen. But man, it sure stopped once we took the lead.
Because then all of a sudden they had a little pep in their step. I thought about that this year. I think, was it Kentucky and A&M where they couldn't start a new inning?
I saw that.
And it made me think of that. And I thought, oh boy, we know what that's like. So that's cool. Yeah, that's okay. So then Alpha does, and Alpha's doing good now?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I think every time I look up, if it's somebody that I've heard about, they're on the team. So
I mean, the club space is interesting. It's summer's really short, mm-hmm. right? And you put so much expectation into it. We put so much work into it. Families put so much into it. Like, it's 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, it's 6 weeks, and it's a 6-week sprint, but it's 6 weeks.
And it is a sprint. It's not
6 weeks where kids don't have anything else to do either. Right. This isn't old school college summer ball where you go off to the Northwoods and you're living in the backwoods of Wisconsin and you got nothing to do but play baseball and maybe fish.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you might have to fly back for an area code tryout, or you're going to PG National, or your high school coach is demanding that you be at something, or you may play another sport and everyone's trying to get their hooks into top athletes. Right.
Yeah. Right. And I think,
and they're all competing in a very short time frame, and there's no way to not overlap. So that creates some pressure. Family, you know, you're talking about how much money it costs, getting off of work, like, not easy for everybody. So you have all this expectation going into it, and then kind of need to catch lightning in a bottle quick, right?
And be good.
And if you remember, Joey's team, your son's team, they win the freshman WWBA, and then we go to the UBC the next spring and stink up the joint.
That's right.
Right.
We did.
And like, what is happening here? Like, mm-hmm. we have this great team, quote unquote. It didn't look like it, right?
Yeah. Won the biggest tournament, and now the not.
I think we went 1-2. You know, it was bad, right?
It wasn't good.
And it took some doing. Now, Joey got dinged up and was out the rest of that summer. But I, you know, I was with them. I wasn't coaching the team at the time, but I was with them when they were up at Oregon State.
Mm-hmm.
And I distinctly remember sitting with two of the guys and going, like, what the heck is going on here? Why are we not having fun?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And I think it was Troy Yuletson, who plays high school ball with your son.
Yeah.
Troy goes, like, I don't know, coach. Like, in the fall, like, we were just playing.
Yeah.
And like, now we're ranked number this, and there's all this pressure. And I'm like, pressure? Like,
yeah.
We don't talk about anything other than be better tomorrow than you are today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even know we were ranked number this. And like, I got to tell you something. Like, I think they were like seven. I don't know. Like, you might not be the 70th best team in the country right now. Like, who cares?
Yeah, right.
Like, who cares?
Right.
And like, so we got the boys together and like, all right, like, we got to get back to being ourselves, right? Like, let's go out and be loose and have fun and let it fly a little bit. And it seemed to get better. And, you know, they got hot as hell in Cary, obviously, and
yeah.
Win, you know, probably the toughest tournament in America to win.
Because everybody wanted to be there.
It's a 16-team yeah. invite-only tournament. Yeah. It's yeah. all, you know, almost all of the top players and teams
That's
are there.
That's at the USA Baseball Complex. It's some of the fantastic. Nicest fields I think I've ever seen.
And then a week after that, you know, running on fumes, they go and win the PG World Series.
That's right.
Right.
That's
so right. This team that stunk up the joint, and you probably had every parent going, like, I don't know about this team, right? Like, we might not be that good.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I
hope I didn't yeah. put my eggs in the wrong basket, right?
Yeah.
And then they win two national titles, right, in a two-week span.
That's wild. I mean, yeah, that team's resume is pretty good. I think, obviously, not discrediting anyone, like, there's a little bit of luck that goes into that. You know
there's
what I mean?
And
back to that five inning, you know, the rain delays in Florida and the five inning game stuff. But yeah, you still got to play and you still got to be good enough. And you still got to, you got to have a kid that is willing to listen, do what he's asked to do, go take the mound, even though he's not a pitcher. Hey man, just throw strikes, let the defense work for you, whatever. Right. Like
you have to get,
yeah,
you to win when you go to any of those big tournaments with a team like we have, or some other teams have, like the WWBA in Georgia, there's 400 something teams. There's 12 that could win.
Yeah.
Right. There might be 200 that could win a game against anybody.
Yeah.
But they ain't winning. They ain't running that gauntlet of eight straight playoff games.
Like, right. Right.
There's 12 teams that could win. The goal for me is just, well, let's try to be one of the 12.
Yeah. Like, get into that final.
But if you think about that, it means we're only going to win one out of 12 times, right? On yeah. average.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's if you are one of those 12 teams. Yeah. Like, it ain't easy.
No.
You're going to play good teams. Sometimes the ball doesn't bounce your way. Sometimes they beat you.
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes you step up, you get hot at the right time. You get a call that goes your
sometimes
way.
Sometimes you beat yourself.
The
right?
other team runs out of arms. Like
baseball's
those things
a hard sport.
All happen. Right. And
yeah.
it's, I mean, on the college game, no different. Think about the Tennessee team a few years ago, like might've been the best college team ever. And they didn't even make it to Omaha.
Mm.
They lose in the Supers. Right?
Yeah. Like, yeah. You can look at all sorts of like, college teams, right?
Just,
NFL team. I mean,
baseball's not else. A sport where the best team wins all the time in a game.
Right.
Right. And so like winning definitely has an element of luck.
Yeah, there's nine dudes on the like, on the field. You know?
I'm not saying you don't do everything possible to try to win.
For sure.
But
for sure. So I got this other question here, and
okay.
I said in the last 5 years, because that's kind of the time we've been, you know.
Sure.
What has changed the most with running a high-level travel ball team and recruiting? I know that's two different things, but
sure,
kind of just...
Okay. Well, let's take recruiting first.
Yeah, that's
because the running a travel ball team is interesting because like we've only been doing it for 5 years. So like,
right.
And the world changed in that time, right?
Yeah, so, yeah.
First of all, in recruiting, God, a lot has changed, right? Like 5 years ago, let's talk pre-COVID, right?
Yeah.
There's no transfer portal. There's a different roster limit. They can still go and recruit eighth graders and ninth graders, and you have all the early recruiting stuff happening. So since then, and you don't have all the old guys in college baseball because they got an extra year from COVID and
yeah,
a red
right,
shirt
right.
and the roster logjam that left over. It has been progressively more transactional.
Mm-hmm.
College sports have gotten more transactional. Youth sports have gotten more transactional.
Right.
To the point that I think you would say it's hyper transactional now, right? Like 5 years ago, these things all happened. but it was rare when a kid decommitted from a school. It was rare when a school dropped a recruit. It's not rare anymore.
And that was, like, do you think that was the kid decommitting? That could be a slew of things. The colleges decommitting from the kid, they probably didn't want to do that because then they would lose, you know, people would lose faith in their commitment, right? Say, hey, correct. You didn't
It was frowned upon.
Frowned upon.
Right. So I'm not saying it didn't happen. It did.
Yeah, for sure.
But not anywhere near the level and the amount that it's happening now. And I think you get into a spot where, like, all of a sudden the rosters are different and all of a sudden there's money involved and NIL money comes into play and everything feels more professionalized and less personal. And therefore I need to win or I get fired. Right at the highest levels.
Yeah, these coaches and these people recruiting.
Let's be honest also, like the money got pretty real for those guys, right? You've got college coaches making $3 million a year in baseball. Not many.
Yeah.
But like.
There's a couple.
There weren't very many. Like there was one or two making $1 million a year 5 years ago.
Right.
Not that long ago. Right. We're not talking 20 years ago. 5 years ago.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, all of a sudden you've got, hey, if I really win, this is life-changing stuff.
Right.
Right. That creates a different level of pressure and maybe a different willingness to be transactional, right?
in doing what you're doing.
And you've got alumni and boosters saying, you know, your budget is win a national championship.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have a budget. Like,
You don't have a budget, but like you get fired if you don't win a national championship and we'll give you millions and millions and millions if you do. Like, well, now you're incentivized to go get the best players and do what you need to do. You do that at a time that the transfer portal opens where guys no longer have to sit a year.
Right.
So like, listen, I've been friends with Jay Johnson for a long time since he was an assistant coach at San Diego.
Okay.
He's a great guy.
He's a phenomenal recruiter, right?
I mean, he's a great coach. And LSU doesn't win a national title if they don't have Tommy White and Paul Skeens.
Yeah.
And those guys were transfer portal guys. Not illegal, not unethical. I'm just telling you, like,
but you had a guy that knew how to go out and get those guys.
Sure. But like they had a great team without Paul, who played at Air Force, and Tommy, who played at NC State, right? And a couple other guys. But like those two come to mind most present. They don't win that title. Jay's contract and career, whatever he got from that.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't the same if they don't win that title. Right.
Yeah, you could easily, I mean, the numbers are out there, right? You can easily go and say, hey, and we could leave Jay out of it, but just like hypothetically, right? Two players on a certain team didn't have a spot anymore because we brought two guys in.
Correct. Two guys got cut.
And then those two guys, you know, parents that got cut are probably like, man, you know, whatever, this, right, blah, blah. But then the team wins, the money influx into the town, the program, everything. And then the coaching staff as a whole, right? They're now, life has been
right. So I think bettered. Everybody, you know, if people are listening, like, you probably understand, like, well, of course you'd take Paul Skeens, right? Every team would take Paul Skeens.
Every team,
A, he's a great kid. B, he's the best pitcher in the country, right? Yeah, like, duh. But then it's not just him, right? It's 100 guys at 50 different schools.
Yeah.
And now you're at, you know, you have mid-majors that, oh, we can bring in so on. And they're not bringing in a guy that's going to be a number one starter in the big leagues, but they think he's a little better than the guy you have. And it becomes much more difficult to maintain relationships and long-term developmental plans when the guy just might leave, right? If I need to give you fast results or you're gone, how can I do something that might take time, right?
Well, that seems to be the caveat now, I think, when, you know, we started this, you know, our 5-year plan, right? In eighth grade, ninth grade, there was these conversations and you were looking at people and go, oh, hey, man, we really like this. And then now when we actually got to recruiting, we went to places, that stuff came into play, right?
So, it was kind of obviously, like recently, and it affected, I think, first the 26 class, there's a rule change where now they can't talk to anybody about recruiting until August 1st going into their junior year.
Okay.
As you know, in eighth grade and ninth grade, like recruiting was already going on.
There was conversations, heavy, right? Like, right.
So when we were at the freshman World Woodbat, all freshmen, there's 80 schools there.
Right.
Right. When we're at the freshman World Woodbat this year, there's zero schools there.
So that's a point that,
which I'm great with the change, but it's a massive change, right? It's all happening later now. et cetera, et cetera. So you have some specific rules, and then the older guys, the transfer portal, there's new rules coming in. There's going to be more new rules by the time your kid's done playing college baseball, and I don't know what they're going to be.
Now, I heard that, and if I'm wrong, like, and this will probably be a question for you, and hopefully it doesn't hinder you guys, but like, so that wood bat for the kids that the schools can't talk to, and now the schools aren't there, that used to be there.
Yep.
Does it make, you know, you say, hey man, maybe that trip's not worth going to now, because we used to want to go to that for
this.
It
does. I think what you end up with is going like, okay, so we don't have to chase exposure, which is awesome.
Yes.
Like, what are we chasing? And the answer is we're chasing competition.
Okay.
Right. Should there be competition in the West? There should, but there isn't.
Okay.
There's a million good players out West. There's no reason that we shouldn't have events that are cheap enough to go to that are great, but we don't.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
And so you still then are left with like, do I want to be in Georgia for 9 days in 105 degree heat playing a bunch of mediocre games to get to play a few good games? Like, not really.
Right.
But it's my best option.
Okay. Right? So you still like it for the competition aspect.
I think it's the only reason to go. And I also like, we're taking for the first time, we're actually taking, and we have two teams, the Alpha Prime and the Alpha Power. We're taking the Power teams, the freshman and sophomore, to the WWBA.
And so the conversation is not about recruiting.
We can eliminate the FOMO part.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. You've been there, and now you see that it's fine.
Yeah.
Right?
And yeah. You like, got to experience it.
And now
it
when it actually matters for your kid, you're not going, oh, you know, have us go to the WWBA, because I know that's not going to do your kid any good, because no SEC or big-time ACC school is going to be interested in him. He needs to be out West in front of, you know, the mid-majors that are actually going to recruit him that summer.
That brings up a great, you know, and I don't know how you've done it, but like, just when you're talking to parents and they feel like I had to have a conversation with the parent the other day, and I'm like, man, your son's great, you know, but like, I don't have any skin in the game. And so I feel like hopefully they took it the right way, where I was just like, hey, I wouldn't bother going to the East Coast, you know, or going to this school's program until you look like a certain thing or you do a certain thing. Yeah. And I'm sure people get like, oh, what an asshole, you know, because just your kid's this and that. Yeah, I'm sure they
not
do,
to
right?
Not just to you, like to me too.
No, right, but it is hard to be honest with people, and I don't have the same experience. I mean, you have 1,000 times more, but like, it is easier sometimes to just be like, hey, listen, if you're willing to listen to this advice that I have for you, that's it.
I think that's how it has to be, right? Like, I can't remember what I say when I don't tell people the truth, but I always, I'll remember what I thought.
Right.
So, I can get myself in trouble with it, but like, if you came to me and asked me a question, I'm going to assume that you wanted me to tell you what I actually think. Right.
Right.
Cause you just shouldn't have asked me if you didn't want to know.
Yeah.
And I think I have that reputation too. So I think,
for sure.
I think, you know, if people are just looking for attaboys, I'm probably not the guy they're going to. Right.
Right.
But those conversations don't always get received well. Right. Like you're talking about, you know, parents' perceptions of their child,
yeah,
versus my perceptions are probably not the same. Some value that, some probably value it and are pissed off, and some are just pissed off.
Yeah, and I mean, the analogy always comes to mind to me. You know, you look online or you go on these, you know, we now are living in a world where Angel and I always say like, hey, don't read the comments. We took that from Joe Rogan, right? Because he was like, hey, don't read the comments, because it'll drive you nuts, right? But every kid that throws 99 online, right, has some parent that's like, oh, but does he throw strikes? My kid paints the corners and he throws 75. And you're like, dude, that's awesome. Like, be happy for your kid. You don't have to bag on the other kid, and vice versa, you know? But understand that your painted corner 75 isn't going to get the same attention. And
there's been points like when you ask me the truth, like, hey, what, you know, how's this going to go? Like, I owe you my version, my opinion of the truth. If I bullshit you, how the hell am I serving you? How am I serving your kid? How am I doing the job that you?
No, I think you called it a bloodbath, right? That was great. It's like, hey, these guys are going to go to college in this 25 class, and it's going to get tough, you know, because all the rules, they're in a washing machine right now. They think. You know, it's like, you ever put your clothes in the dryer?
And it's going to be a bloodbath before then.
They're going to be done in 10 minutes. It's like, it's been 15 minutes, dude, and it hasn't happened. So
I mean, you're basically left with, well, what are your options? Like, you can't game this system. No. Right? Like the system's changing anyway. You can't even anticipate what the system's going to be.
Just be if good.
You're, you know, because you're going to be in the spot. Your kid's a senior. He's a really good player. He's going to a prestigious school. I guarantee you there's a parent of a freshman that's going, hey, Joe, what should we? They're like,
yeah.
And like, you don't know. You know how it worked for him.
And I'm like, hey, dude, what I thought as a freshman and what I think now are I'm in two different worlds.
And I'm telling you that the rules are going to be different.
Yeah.
So the whole, the world is going to be different for that dude by the time he gets there.
Yeah.
And like, that doesn't mean that they can't listen to you, but like, it's not necessarily going to be the same. You're talking about how's it different than 5 years ago? And we've talked for 15 minutes, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Like, yeah, exactly.
And so you're left with, you have to be undeniable. That's the only way through this, right? Like, that means like, be intentional about what you're doing, be prepared, be present, and be really, really good.
Yeah.
If you're not those things, like, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And like, oh yeah, but we know so-and-so. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. That's a funny one where people always go, you know, and coaches, we saw it more in the softball world, but it was like, oh, hey, I have a great reputation. I have a great, relationship with this coach at this college. Yeah. And I'll be, and it's like, well, that coach at that college, no matter how good of a friend they are of yours, like they may take your call, so, but still got to be undeniable.
I always get amused by it because I feel like sometimes like people now doing this alpha thing, like they think that like there's some sort of like secret magic sauce, right? Because we've had a lot of Division I commits. Like here's the deal. They're Division I commits because they're good, not because of us, right? I'm not saying we didn't do a good job for them, but like,
no, but that's probably the truest thing you'll hear someone say.
Professional friends with Thomas Eager, who's the recruiting coordinator and coach at Stanford. I coached with him.
Phenomenal.
Okay. I like him. We respect each other, whatever, whatever. The idea that I can tell him who to take is laughable.
Right.
Okay. Like his job is to evaluate for himself.
Yeah. Yeah. How
and
he
to meet
feeds
guys
his family
and see
and
them
how he, yeah,
and all
100%.
That. So what you can get, and I'm using that as an example, but what somebody can get with a connection, hey, this guy played there, this guy coached with this guy, is you can get him to come see you.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Okay. There is not recruiting that's being done by word of mouth. It doesn't work that way in Division
I. It's kind of like
baseball.
The interview, right? You know, and there is some of that to be said, like, hey, it, who you know does matter.
It does.
And I can get you an interview.
It can get you in a door.
I can get you an interview, but once you're in the interview, you got to be good.
So this is before Alpha. Like I'm coaching a kid. He ended up being a wonderful D2 player. I was his high school coach.
Okay.
And he asked me if I would call, I think it was Auburn. He goes, would you call Auburn for me? I go, no.
Right.
He's upset. He's my dude.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah.
And he's upset. He's like, why? I'm like, what would you want me to tell them? Hey, I got a guy for you. Okay, tell me about him. He's a 5'11 right-hander who throws 83 to 87. You know, and he's got average command, and he's a really good kid.
Hmm.
Like, how do you think that conversation's going to go?
Yeah,
they're going to hang up on me.
Yeah, okay? Right.
Like, you're not good enough for them. I'm sorry.
I had a funny conversation with one of the national recruiters for a softball program, and the guy's been great to me. He lives out in Georgia, and he was telling me about a time where a ACC school called and said, hey, tell me about this player of yours. And he said, she's not good enough, you know, for your program. And he goes, we saw her. We really loved her like dugout presence,
sure,
you know, fire spark plug and just da, 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 da. And he said, well, hell, like if that's what you're looking for, she's a SEC all American, you know, teammate, this and that. And he said, she ended up going to that school. Conversation was way different. Hey, this is the offer is to come here and be on the team, and we really need you as a, I think it was a bullpen and something like that. But and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. So there are, I think, avenues or aspects of just being a good coach, having good rapport, being honest with these schools, and not
like
BSing.
You can disagree.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? Like you ask me what I think, and I have to be able to say that and know, let's just say I got a call about your son.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's I have easiest. To be able to give that college coach an honest evaluation and know that he's not going to be on the phone with him and go, hey, you know, I talked to your travel coach and he said your curveball isn't good enough.
Yeah.
You know, cause now that dude's on another team. Right.
Yeah.
And the college coach needs to know that he can tell me, hey, I'm concerned about this, and know that I'm not calling that kid's dad and going, hey, you know, the coach at so-and-so said your kid's breaking ball sucks. Right. Like there's a lot of like, we have to tell the truth, but not the whole truth.
No, I think you and I, and you may not remember this, and we brought up Eager because that guy was great to Joey. I mean, he's phenomenal. You know, I loved the idea of Stanford, the whole thing. And then Joey wasn't a Stanford student, right? But I remember a time where I called you. I said, hey, I think we're getting close. And you're like, wait, what? Like, what's close, you know? And so we had this really specific, honest dialogue. And I realized, okay, awesome. You know, what I think and what you think and what he thinks, we're in a circle, but the circle's not as tight as I thought, you know, or whatever, you know? And so we said, oh, well, I think he said 83 or something, you know? And you're like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. We're at 81, you know? And okay, cool. But I did always appreciate that about with you specifically, with Eager, I thought was honestly great too, because you don't always
Thomas
get
is,
that.
Thomas yeah. is a wonderful
and you get, you know, we've had way different ones.
Sure.
We've had some way, you know, just the ones where you're like, what happened? Because what, like, I thought we were here and we're not there. So, we were not there and we're here.
I just try to remember in every walk of life, this includes college baseball or softball coaches, right?
Yeah.
I don't know any college softball coaches, but I'm sure it's true. There are some that are great, all-time greats, elite at everything they do. There are some that are god-awful. Like, they can't communicate, they can't coach, they're bad. Most are somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, it's like real estate. And like there's good realtors and there's really bad realtors. And you're like,
and there's in between, right?
Yeah, and how do you do your job?
And they can do one part of it well, but they struggle at the other. Hey, he's a great coach, he's a great guy, but the communication, hey, he means well. Or yeah, he can really communicate, but he's a bad guy, right?
Yeah.
Like there is a full gamut of that. And like, you're not going to know because I can't come on a podcast or even a conversation and be like, oh, the coach at so-and-so is a real jerk.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah. Well, there's definitely vibes.
And
though.
That's an opinion too, right?
You know, like, that's what I mean. There's you go to meet people and we saw it, right? Went to three different schools. We got three different point of views and luckily, you know, Joey meshed up with one, you know,
sure.
And had we guessed beforehand, oh, I think he's going to like this, or I think he's, we would have been totally wrong.
Right.
And that's you got to go live it, walk it, touch it. I mean, I think when it comes to recruiting in colleges, do you agree? Like you really need to get out there and check out the school and the vibe.
Of course.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, the trick is obviously like we live in this Instagram world, right? And the day your kid commits is a good Instagram day for him, right?
Yeah,
like, everyone says nice things, and tomorrow they don't give a crap, right?
It's all done, yeah.
Right? But you have to live 3 years or more of your life there, right? Like, that, the Instagram stuff goes away, right? Like, this is a life decision. Like, you got to make a home there. Is this the place that you can take off as a young man, as a player,
right?
Whether it's facilities or location or coaching staff or academics or whatever your reasons or mix of reasons are, does it feel right? Like, how the hell can you know that from a phone call?
Yeah, you can't. Like, I think I told you.
You can know which one seems more prestigious on Instagram.
Yeah, you and that's like everybody's social media life, right? I mean, you're always hitting a home run and you're never striking out. And you're always throwing a CG no hitter. You never got blown up in the first inning and didn't make it out.
Like to use that as an example, like, Joey Summer last summer, right?
Right.
He had a great summer, and it went, I think, largely how I told you it was going to go.
Yeah.
Right? No, in terms of like, hey, as soon as he gets out there, we're fine, right? Instantly. Like, how many schools were at the exhibition game we threw at Duke? I think it was just Duke.
Yeah.
But, how many offers and calls did he get that night?
Yeah, yeah. It was
more than Duke, right?
Like, yeah, yes,
like,
yes.
I think it was five, okay? But
it was,
right?
It was
a week
like
and a half before that, he stunk out loud at the Potters game.
That's
right.
That's right. I think, yeah, he did. He had hit a couple numbers, but it wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't like.
But like, it wasn't pitchable. It wasn't good.
It wasn't
like,
good.
And then he was really good, and he kept that in his three outings.
Yeah.
Outside of that, he was great.
Yeah.
Because
he pulled off three in a row. It was like, here you go, boom, boom, boom. And
yeah, but it just took one for the 6'5".
It only takes
for
one.
The 6'5" lefty.
Yeah.
Who throws in the 90s.
And you got to know though.
Now
too.
if you're the 5'10" righty who throws 88,
it's a different.
They have to see you be good 20 times.
Right.
And like that's unfair, but it's how it is.
And life is unfair though. We talk about that, right?
Right.
So with all this stuff and what we've talked about, I mean, any advice to the younger crowd, like, hey, you have an, and I think I had that as the one of these questions, right? Is like, hey, with, you know, what advice would you give the 8 to 10 U parents when it comes to the intensity and the travel?
Well, I mean, I've probably ignored more advice than just about anybody in my life. So I don't,
take this advice. I'm not using it.
I don't feel great about like trying climbing on top of the mountain and preaching at people, but I'll just share some observations, I guess. Like, first of all, every journey will be different.
Yep.
You know, I don't like, I've coached for 27 years. I don't think kids have changed, but everything around them has changed. To steal my friend Jason Sakani's line, the cultural assignment of what has value has changed. Distractions have changed. The phones have changed a lot of that. The incentives have changed. So, you know, in terms of how much to travel and spend, like, I think it's different for every family. The world is what it is, and it's going to change again over the next few years. Like, do what is fun for you and your kid. Do what you can afford. Don't do the stuff that isn't fun for you or that you can't afford.
Right.
You don't have to. You can make it from any path. You don't have to play, even in high school, you don't have to play with Alpha to be a Division I player or a college player or a team like us. You don't have to. You have to be really good.
Yeah, right.
Right? You should do this if this is what helps you be really good and this is fun and your family can swing it, right?
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't do it for the other reasons. I would tell them you can't game the system. There is no one right way. But stop looking for the secret.
Yeah.
There is no effing secret.
Like, the secret is be good.
The secret is be good and figure out what it means to be good for your kid. And that process takes some time. You know, I think I wrote a couple little notes just to make sure I didn't say anything stupid, right? Like, I probably did anyway. But
oh,
like,
yeah, exactly.
We're like, stay focused on what matters would be if I had to give advice, like that's it in a nutshell. Like,
and what matters? Getting what matters better or like, winning?
Is it fun for them?
Okay.
Because they ain't gonna do the hard stuff if it isn't fun at those ages.
Yep.
They're gonna quit the damn sport. Okay. They're gonna stop working at it if it isn't fun. And are they improving?
Yeah.
Right? Are you seeing them level up on a regular basis? And are they enjoying the process of leveling up? Like, incentivize the things that will scale, incentivize work ethic, reward that, right? Like, only rewarding hits,
yep,
right?
Yep.
You're effing up.
Yeah, you should be rewarding the BP or the time or the effort that you put in.
You should be, yes, like, drive and their desire to make it is what's going to help them. The natural talent you can't control. They can develop the skill earlier or later. Not a bad thing to do.
Right, right.
But like, they're not professionals yet. Don't try to train them like them.
Right.
Don't try to like coach them like them. They're kids. Understand how kids learn things, how kids come to do it. They mess it up. They fall down. Pick them up. Mess it up again.
Right.
They fall down. Right. Pick them up. They mess it up again. And then they figure it out. Right. Like, so the failure is good.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you can't disincentivize failure. My funniest example, which I hadn't thought of in years. So I started off coaching at the bottom of the coaching rung, right? Like,
everybody, I think
the first team that I coached was a 10U Little League team. I was an assistant coach on a 10U Little League team. Our best player was a girl. Now, she was actually pretty good, but
yeah.
Like, I don't know that there's a lot lower in the coaching tree, okay? Like,
yeah, yeah, Little League.
So
yeah.
This is maybe 2 years in, and we're in Little League fall ball. This is supposed to be as low-key as it gets, okay? Yeah. And it's the first at-bat of Little League fall ball. This little 11-year-old boy is up, and there's his dad sitting by the fence, and he's a very nice guy, but he's so nervous. And he's so nervous, and he's trying to cheer, and he's trying to be positive, and his fingers are going through the fence. And right as the pitcher, like, comes set, he goes, hit 333, and I'll buy you a dog.
Oh, Jesus.
I always swore if I wrote a book about it, like, yeah. like Like, that will be the title. Hit 333 and I'll buy you a dog. Not a hot dog, yeah, a dog, yeah, right? Yeah, like, yeah, like, let me get my kid focused on an external goal that he can't even reach today, right? Like,
that's
this
wild.
Manic thing that's in my head as being important. Like, don't make your anxiety his anxiety. Don't make your anger and frustration his problem. They're not his problem. He's got his problems.
That's a great point.
He's got to play a really hard game against guys that are trying to kick his ass.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Like, everybody wants to win. That's why they're playing.
Right. So, like, there's all this stuff that goes into parenting that is understandable. But, like, as a dad that really cares, like, hey, man, like, button your shit up.
Yeah.
Like, do it. Don't do it for me. Do it for him.
Yeah.
You know, like, it ain't his problem. You're making your shit his shit.
You're making your shit. That's a good way of putting it. I mean, because you think, like, that is, and it happens. I mean, I think it was last year. I forget where I read it, but it really stuck to me where I was like, hey, you know, your kids' failures are actually their biggest, like, learning moments, you know?
Absolutely.
And so if you as a parent, you know, because I almost say I live and die with their successes and failures, but, like, man, when they fail, it hurts me, you know, because I know how hard they want it. And as a father, I want them to get what they want.
I think as coaches and teachers,
100%.
You feel similarly, like, maybe not with the same intensity.
No,
level,
but yeah, you
but like,
you know, like, they want it and you care for them.
I want them to fail.
Yeah, it's empathy.
I want them to succeed, right? But, like, I understand that failure is part of it and it's not final. I don't want them to feel like it's final because, like, it isn't.
It was Dawn, it's the head coach at South Carolina women's basketball. Dawn Stanley. Yeah, she said, you know, a lot of you guys don't let your kids fail, and it shows, right? Yep. Because when they get here, there's no parents to help them, you know?
Right.
And I thought, gosh, what a great point. Like, I should not embrace, but understand that when they fail here at home, at least I'm here to catch them. You know what I'm saying? At least I'm here to say, hey, what'd you think? And kind of just get an idea from them to help mold it so that when they are in the house, they know how to handle it.
So I look at this, I look at, like, coaching and setting up team culture this way. I wonder if it applies to parenting. Like, you know, coaches, we sometimes try to control everything, right, that's happening.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not really realistic, right? What we really ought to be doing is setting up the boundaries. Think of it as like bumper lanes in a bowling alley.
Yeah.
Right? As long as they're in between the two, I got to let them figure it out, right? But they're not going to go further than here, and they're not going to go further than
here. That's a good point.
I'm not going to let them go outside of, like, what I know. And everybody's got to figure out how tight they make the bumpers.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? Like, we can disagree about, you know, well, you know, Adam, you like it loose. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to teach them to do it for themselves. Right? Yeah. That freedom is part of it. But, like, it's not completely free. Right? Like, they can't go further than here and here. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
As long as they're inside that, like, they can be idiots.
Right.
Because that's part of them figuring out the path and figuring out how it needs to work for them. I think that probably applies to parenting as well.
100%. You know, you definitely want to try and control everything. And as soon as you learn that you're really not in control, it's almost easier because then you realize, hey, I think that's a great way to put it, man. You sit in the bumpers. Like, okay, I'm not going to let you fall off the cliff.
Like, there's this word, you've heard it. Like, and obviously your son trains at a great place. And, we do development, right?
Yeah.
Like, development.
Yeah.
What is development?
Yeah.
Like, you're developing every second.
Right.
Right? Like, you develop in games. You develop in practice. You develop sitting on the couch at home watching a ball game.
Yeah, yeah. You
development is an ever-present process for a young man, right?
For like, sure. Yeah, no, that's, like, a good point.
It's like this idea that, like, oh, development only happens in a sterile indoor batting cage, you know, with green carpet, and, you know, it has to be 68 degrees, and it's bullshit.
No, and I can tell you that, like, Joey's biggest success.
That doesn't mean they don't do a good job.
No, but like, it came when he was off. You know what I'm saying? It came when he was injured and he was out. And so, you know, as when Joey was young, and Z would always tell me, like, hey, he's getting better at practice, not in these games. Don't always sign him up for these games. Cause, you know, we were like, hey, we didn't meet a game we didn't like. You know what I mean? Yeah. Oh, competition. And then it took years to understand that, like, well, there's a fine balance there, you know.
And what's right for your son and your family might be different than what's right for the family across the street and their son, right? And so
100%.
We all want to, well, this was right for me. I believe you.
Yeah.
But, like, don't judge anybody else because they've got to go figure it out and navigate it. And, yeah, they're going to make some mistakes along the way. And maybe they play too much and maybe they don't. here's what I can tell you from 25 years of watching tournaments and watching the cycles of players come through and guys that I coached or guys that I just saw. There were guys who never played travel ball who were in the big leagues. There are guys who pitched 13 innings in a weekend back in the day, not with me coaching.
Yeah, yeah. But
13 innings in a weekend, every weekend, 48 weeks a year, who are in the big leagues.
Yeah.
Right?
It happened to work.
There's a kid
for them,
in the big leagues who used to sit in front of Twin Creeks with his dad and wait for a team to pick him up for the weekend. I asked him once how many jerseys he had in his closet, and he said 108.
Jeez.
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, we're all trying to figure it out. I would always use this.
Like, that seems crazy to me.
100%.
But my point is,
100%.
Before you judge it, just know that it can work. And before you judge the dad who goes, oh, none of that matters. We're going to hit on Friday nights. We're not doing any of this stupid. Fair. That was the right thing for them, potentially. And they figure, you know, you figure it out. I have seen guys who were what we would all call abused in terms of their usage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Blow out and have Tommy John. I have seen the most carefully managed arms you can imagine that never threw more than 40 pitches and never threw that many innings and over followed. Also blow out and have Tommy John.
I always felt that way. Like we were in that same boat where I was always cognizant, right? We played three sports. We didn't even play baseball year round and it still happened, you know? And I used to use this analogy a lot as a cop. And I think it helped me, you know, understand that you meet people and you see the outcome and you just judge, you know, you just think.
And by the way, those two examples, the guy that threw 13 innings a weekend and the guy that 40 pitches, those guys both pitched in the big leagues.
Yeah.
They also pitched in the big leagues after they blew out and had Tommy John.
Like, yeah, yeah. That's surgery, a nice thing.
Surgery sucks, but
it's not
your
period,
kid went through it, and it's also like, it's not death.
Yeah, you didn't die. You didn't die.
It's not something we're seeking,
yeah.
But we spend so much time being terrified of it, and we don't know how to stop it yet. I know everybody's got their theory. I even have a theory. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Right? Like, it's part of what we're dealing with. If you're going to push the envelope and you're going to try to be the highest, you're going to push your body to the limit of what it can do, which is what it takes to be an elite performer.
Yeah.
Sometimes it breaks, right? So you start with this vision. Let's say you're a hitter, right? There's the Mount Rushmore and there's Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
And there's Ted Williams and there's Barry Bonds and there's you. Right. And that's what you're going for.
Yeah,
right. You're going to push your body to the absolute limit. You're going to do things that you probably shouldn't do to do that. Right. And the breaking is part of it. As much as it sucks, as terrible as it is, right? Like what was right for your son who's trying to be an elite athlete and one of the best in the world might not be the same answer as the guy that's very happy being an average player on a high school baseball team. Enjoying the experience, getting a few hits, you know, maybe getting a walk off at some point. Like they're chasing it in a totally different way. And we got to back off of them and, oh, you got to go play for, you know.
Yeah.
Like, no, they don't.
Like, well, you've seen that though, where, you know, the parent is the one driving it. And you're like, hey, this is going to end sooner than it should because the wrong person's in the driver's seat.
Right. And it's something, I don't know if you remember, like, I think I said it to the parents on the 25 team last year on our parent meeting, like, listen, like, I know you guys have done this, right? Done all these trips. You've been to all these places. It's old hat for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just remember, in a year, you're going to miss it.
Yeah. No, we talk. I mean,
like,
I'm already.
Last ride. Yeah. Like, it's the last ride. It's the last time they get to do this.
Yeah,
we got some work to do. Yeah, we got to take care of them.
Yeah,
we got to help try to get them a little more ready for college than they are because they're clearly not ready now, right? Even though they're great players, but like it's okay to enjoy that ride with them. Like, in fact, like I strongly encourage it because you'll be really pissed at yourself if you don't.
Yeah, yeah. And I like, you know, I think in closing, the funny part is that I would always say, "Hey, the kids don't come with instructions," you know, and I would use that in the cop world too,
sure.
Like. Hey man, they don't come with instructions. You're trying your best. I assure you, as a parent, you want the best for your kid. As the coach, you want the best for your players.
Right.
Otherwise, why are you coaching? You know. And at OA, they always, you know, Ryan would say, "Oh man, if you're worried about getting hurt, then don't play." Right. Because that's the only way to prevent. Sure. And not everybody gets injured, but people get hurt. You know?
I'll also tell you that, like, I'm convinced that the guys that are more concerned about getting hurt get hurt more.
Oh yeah, it's got to be a psychological thing. Like, you're just
I'm not that guy. Like, I can't prove it, but that's how it seems like.
Yeah.
Also, guys that aren't concerned about getting hurt get hurt. So like,
there's a balance, right? There's that thing.
One of the parents on the team was a really high level, I think, spine surgeon.
Oh, okay.
And excellent doctor, right? And we had a kid on the team who was always, quote, getting hurt, but he wasn't actually hurt.
Right.
Right. And something happens on a base, the doctor comes out, he goes, I think you should go get an x-ray. You know, like, I think it might be broken. And I looked at him kind of funny. He goes, hypochondriacs get hurt too.
Because you're thinking, yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah. Come on. Oh, this dude cries four times a game. You know, like yeah. What are we doing? He's like, I think he's actually hurt this time. Like,
well, then maybe I should take your advice.
It might be the 40th time, but the 40th time's the charm. He's actually hurt.
That's awesome. Well, thanks, man. I appreciate you coming on. I think we're at the hour 15 minute mark. Perfect. So yeah.
So I don't have to criticize you for a 2-hour podcast.
No, exactly. I mean, someone will listen to the end and they'll hear it through, but thank you as always. Thanks for everything you've done for our family. I know you've been a great resource for me, a great coach to Joey. And so we appreciate you.
All right. Thank you very much. Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, man.
Appreciate it.
Bye.